Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm John Norman. Welcome to Following On Road to the Ashes from TalkSport in the UK and SEN in Australia. Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison and World Cup winning Aussie all-rounder Simon O'Donnell, your hosts across TalkSport 2 and on the Following On podcast feed. And with the World Test Championship final starting, well, we brought this week's show forward and you're going to hear from Aussie skipper Pat Cummins in an exclusive chat with SEN's Bharat Sundararajan. Also on the show, the man who ran Harmy out for 49, Monty Panesar. Sit back and enjoy.
Australian made. Look for the green and gold kangaroo logo and buy authentic Australian products. Road to the Ashes with Simon O'Donnell and Steve Harmison.
Hello everyone and welcome again to another edition of Road to the Ashes, thanks to Australian Made. Look for the green and gold kangaroo. Simon O with you from the SEN studios here in Australia. And we've got a mighty show coming up for you. Australian captain Pat Cummins, he's gone one-on-one with SEN cricket's Bharat Sundararajan. English spinning great Monty Panesar. Spinning great. Oh, I'm going to debate that with Harmy a little later on, whether we go down the great passage with Monty. But Monty Panesar will be joining us a little later on, and apparently he's a lot of fun, Monty. And we'll preview, of course, the World Test Championship gets underway in just over 24 hours, or just under 24 hours' time. But, as usual, with me from the Talk Sports Studios over in the UK, Steve Harmison joins me, a man whose top test score is 49. What a man he is. Harmy, welcome to you.
Hello, Simon. Hello, everyone. Yeah, 49. It's still there. It's still in black and white. 49.
It's been a long week, mate. They're all getting into me over here. They're all getting into me over here, pal.
Now, looking forward to this week. It's going to be a great week. England did the business last week, and it's going to be, I think, a tough 5 days for Australia at the Oval against India because they look as though they've got a good side. So I think all in all, I think preparation for both sides, even though there's a few injuries knocking about, I think they're all going in the right direction heading in towards June 16.
Let's have a look at that match against Ireland over the weekend. Now, England dominated, as we would expect them to do. I thought a couple of really good things came out of it. Your top order got runs. Your key bowlers, Stuart Broad, 5 for in the first innings, and then Wagging Tongue, he got himself 5 for in the second. So he goes into that squad for the Ashes chock full of confidence after a really good test match effort.
He does. He bowled well in the first innings, but he didn't get the wickets he probably deserved, which I don't think was a bad thing, because then when you've had a good night's sleep, you've digested your first day in test cricket, first innings in test cricket, you feel, right, I bowled well, but I didn't get wickets. How do I now go and get wickets? And he came back second innings. And the beauty about I liked it, Simon, is that he had the durability to keep going at 85, 87 mile an hour. His fifth wicket in the 18th over of the second innings, 80th over third innings of the match was 87 mile an hour. So it tells you that he's got a bit of ticker. He's got some strength there. He's durable and he keeps his pace up, which is something he'll need if he wants to go into forge a good test career. Stuart Broad just doesn't go away, does he? He really doesn't. As much as you want to write him off, as much as you think, right, I'm not, probably he's not in my first 11 when it comes to the Ashes on June 16th. He always, and it was the nap of the week that Stuart Broad was going to get a fifer, and he just doesn't go away. So I think, but there were question marks. There really was question marks. There were periods in that game later on when Ireland's numbers 7 and number 9 put on 160 for the, you know, for the 7th or the 8th wicket, whichever one you were looking at, because there were a man down with a tied hurt. So Jack Leach, obviously he was injured, but at the time you didn't know that, and he didn't look as though he bowled that well. Ball went soft, the deer went flat, the sun was out, pitch was good, and all of a sudden you're thinking, if numbers 7 and 9 for Ireland can go and get 160 in that period, what could Smith, Labuschagne, Head, Green do if that was in the same boat? So I think there's some selection issues for this, you know, England unit to look at and go, well, if it does go like that, we need our fast men. We need something different. And I'm sure that's what they've been thinking of there for when it comes to the selection for next week.
Hard to pick on, you know, those periods of the game where England looked that little bit flat, Hummy. It was Ireland. They were in control. You know, the Ashes, you know, even with the World Test Championship coming up for Australia, that focus is sort of, you know, let's get it out of the road and get on with the Ashes. So I cut them some slack from that point of view. But to see that top order, you know, Ben Duckett, Ollie Pope getting hundreds, Crawley, you know, 50, and then, you know, gets the game over and done with in 4 deliveries in the second innings, those sort of things, you know, they just walk into the dressing room. They did to Ireland what they should have.
Yeah, 100%. 100%, that was the plan. Yeah, England, 12 months ago and before, going to Australia, you know, playing at home, England were like, well, we can't get first innings run. Our highest score in the first innings or any innings is about 320. And we're lucky to get 200 if Joe Root doesn't get 100. All of a sudden now we're hitting 450, 500. They're scores that win test matches, no matter who you're playing, whether you're playing Ireland or you're playing Australia. So that's the good things. There's a lot of good, positive things that come out of it. Harry Brook didn't get a bat. Ben Stokes didn't really get a bat. But England have gone, talked about a flat period with the ball. It could go the opposite way. That could happen to Australia. And if that happened to Australia, even with the firepower that Australia have got, Duckett's got runs under his belt. Pope spent a lot of time in the middle. So they're getting training their brains and their body to cash in when periods go flat in England. And it does go flat. The sun does come out every now and again. And whoever you're playing, you can score quickly in England. So I think there were some good signs, you know, and some not so good signs. And that's now up to Australia to go and do the same against India when the game comes around the corner this week.
I mean, you mentioned earlier, and I think it's really interesting, there's still some injury worries. And I do want to talk about Ben Stokes. I've got a feeling there's something not quite right. By June 16, it may be all okay. If you said to me 3 years ago, that Jack Leach was going to be an integral part of the England 11, I said, mate, whatever you're doing, stop doing it and find another way of, you know, being real, because, you know, he just won't be. But he is. I'll give him his due. You know, he fights like, you know, an absolute lion with the bat. And then his bowling has just come on, and he works off his partner so well at the other end. For him now to go out with stress fractures after this Ireland game and not take part in any of the Ashes, it's a far bigger blow than I ever thought it was going to be when he first started his Test career. One, would you agree with me? And two, who's the guy that comes in, and can he fill a similar role to what a Jack Leach does?
Well, they both go hand in hand, them questions, because, yes, I agree, he's a massive integral part of England's resurgence under Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum. That's down to management. I think Ben Stokes' management of Jack Leach and belief in Jack Leach that, no, he's my man. You will always play on my team, but this is the way you're going to be managed. You're not going to have everybody on the boundary and then bring them in. You're going to have fielders up. You're going to bowl tight line, a line which is looking for wickets rather than a containment. And the flip side to that, the second part of the question is who comes in. The reason why he's an integral part, the reason why he's a massive, he's going to be a big miss, is because of who we've got to come in. Now, England have got in their ranks, they've got some very, very talented spinners, but they're all 18, 17, 18, 19, where you cannot even contemplate mentioning their names at the minute in an Ashes build-up, let alone play them. So they're there for another day. They're still learning their trade. The four names that I've got written down here tells you why Jack Leach is a massive part, because you've got Rian Ahmed, who played in Pakistan, 19-year-old leg spinner. You're not sure, can you put him in? You've got Liam Dawson, very experienced left-arm spinner, but he's a batter who bowls a bit of spin. He's better than that, but he's, in first-class cricket, he's better than that. But in Test cricket, he's a batter that can bowl a bit of spin. Will Jacks, another one, exactly the same as Liam Dawson, but obviously at the other end of his career, just coming through. In first-class cricket, comfortable spinner, but in Test cricket, he's a batter who can bowl a bit of spin. And this is the way I'd go, and this will probably raise eyebrows in Australia. I'd go Moeen Ali. If you can get Moeen Ali to play and get Moeen Ali up for the fight, be part of this new regime for five Test matches, I'd go back to Moeen Ali, and that tells you how threadbare the England spin bowling stocks are, because we're going to have to bring somebody out of retirement who, when he finished playing a few years ago, said he just fell out of love with Test cricket, fell out of love with the longer format of cricket. And I think one of the reasons, Simon, that we haven't had a replacement in the squad, Jack Leach has been out of the squad for about 4 days now. Now, that squad's 10 days away. Yeah, 10 days away from the Ashes. If they had somebody bang straight in, named Jack Leach is out, unfortunate, stress fracture, such and such is in. I think the reason why we haven't got the such and such is in bit, I think they're still trying to convince Moeen Ali that it's right for him to come back and play Test cricket against Australia on June 16th. That's how threadbare we are from a spin bowling point of view.
Okay, just going through the England squad for the Ashes series, I'll just read the names out to you. I want you to pick out two that we're going to see at Edgbaston as the key ingredients for England to do well. Now, the squad as it sits at the moment, now it still has Jack Leach in it. They haven't made the move yet of naming his replacement or not prior to us going to air this evening, but that will happen in the not-too-distant future. Ben Stokes, of course, Ollie Pope, Johnny Bairstow, Joe Root, James Anderson, Stuart Broad, Harry Brook, Jack Leach, who will be replaced, Ben Duckett, Zach Crawley, Matthew Potts, Ollie Robinson, Dan Lawrence, Chris Wokes, Mark Wood, and Josh Tung. Who'll miss out of that group, do you think, in the first test? So your bowlers and your batters, and your key batter, your key bowler, for England to win that first test.
The difficult part to that question is what they do with the spin bowler. Because if they go down with the young leg spinner, then I think it's virtually impossible for Mark Wood to play. Because you've got to remember, Ben Stokes is hardly going to bowl. So England have not, like, it's a little bit like yesteryear. When England played Australia and England had chance to beat Australia and England beat Australia, it was because we had a fantastic all-rounder. Botham in your day, Flintoff in my day, and Stokes now. Now, Strauss's team was a little bit of an anomaly, but he had Swan, who was an unbelievable spin bowler, where Australia always just had four bowlers, three quicks in Warnie. Now, England might have to go down that road, but you've got to have three banking, hang your hat out on the quicks. I would have said last week, if you asked that question, Mark Wood is the integral part of this team. Chances of winning against Australia, because you need a 90 mile an hour plus bowler. Now, trying to pick a 90 plus mile an hour bowler with only four bowlers, and one of them's a 19-year-old leg spinner or a part-time off spinner or a part-time left-arm spinner in Dawson's case, Jax's case and Dawson's case. All of a sudden now so trying to pick somebody is very, very difficult. When it comes to the batting, I think Ollie Pope is massive for England in this series. At number three, he really is. So he'd be the one in the batting department. And then in the bowling department, if Wood is sacrificed because we have to pick a different type of spin bowler and pick three, sort of your Robinson, Anderson and Broad, then I think Robinson's the key man. I think Robinson's a key man anyway, because I think Australia look at him as though he's got good qualities in English cricket, who will be dangerous to the inside and the outside edge and makes the ball bounce. So I think if I was to pick two who need to have good series for England to have a chance, one would be Ollie Robinson and the other one would be Oliver Pope.
Can you take Jimmy Anderson and Mark Wood and Stuart Broad? Can you have two of those three in your attack, particularly with the build-up for James Anderson in particular and for Wood, with injury clouds at times? What's the risk involved there?
I think the risk involved, I think you've got to put the risk involved to what the potential outcome could be. And I think Stokes not bowling as much means you have to be 100% on all four of your bowling options. You're not 100% now on your spin bowling option because if you're going to have to go back to mowing, you're not so sure on that. And the other three names I've mentioned, I've said in this show what the sort of pitfalls are of having them. So Robinson's got an ankle problem. Anderson's got a groin problem. And Wood has had injury problems throughout his career. If one of them goes down a test match, you don't win that test match. Mm. You fight like anything to draw it. But you can't take 20 wickets, and 20 wickets is a currency. So that's where I keep saying that we might have to then go with Broad, Anderson and Robinson, which if it gets to a passage like it did against Ireland and the ball gets flat and the sun comes out, I'm not sure where England get one wicket from if it's that, because they might slow the run rate down, but then they'll be waiting for Australia to make a mistake. That's why they need Wood. That's why they need that little bit extra pace and injection. So it'll be an ask and a risk, whoever they go in with, if you've got with you not having Stokes, but they need Mark Wood. Mm. They need Mark Wood as much as Australia need Pat Cummins. They've got that little bit difference. They've got that little bit X factor. And when it's flat, they can get a wicket from nowhere.
Very interesting. The challenges lay in front of those English selectors from a spin and pace bowling perspective as we build up to June 16, the first Ashes test. But first is the World Test Championship at the Oval. We're going to concentrate on that after the break. This is Road to the Ashes, thanks to Australian Made. Look for the green and gold kangaroo. Pat Cummins will join us next, talking about the World Test Championship, the Ashes ahead. What a summer it's going to be in the UK.
Australian Made. Look for the green and gold kangaroo logo and buy authentic Australian products. Road to the Ashes with Simon O'Donnell and Steve Harmison.
Welcome back to Road to the Ashes. Thanks to Australian Made. Look for the green and gold kangaroo. Simon O'Donnell, Steve Harmison with you. Well, the World Test Championship finally gets underway on Wednesday, June 7, Australian time. Australia taking on India at the Oval, of course, in London. Australian captain Pat Cummins, he caught up with SEN Cricket's Bharat Sandarayson prior to the game. This is what he had to say, the skipper.
Pat Cummins, thanks for joining us on SEN Cricket. You've been part of World Cup finals before, you won World Cups before. World Test Championship final, kind of unique scenario for you. What does it feel like just going into it?
Yeah, it feels unique. Normally those other events are at the back of a busy month-long tournament or so. This has been spread out over 2 years. So I think the mystery of playing India, neutral country, is... yeah, just really interesting. There's just so different to, I guess, a normal test match. So we're excited. We feel like we deserve a spot in the final and pretty excited.
Does it like change the way you prepare at all because of the uniqueness, the randomness almost, right? India is almost fantasy booking, as we call in wrestling, where you're playing India at the Oval in June when it's never happened before.
I'd say you prepare kind of similar to how you prepare against England. Like, it's more about these conditions, getting used to the conditions as a batter and a bowler. And then, some of the research into the opposition doesn't really hold true because they're normally on spinning wickets in Delhi or fast bouncy gabba wicket or something. So it's just a little bit different.
And about the makeup of your team, looks likely that Scott Boland will play now that Josh Hazel has been rested for the Ashes. How do you see him going and just the foursome that you will form with him in the lineup?
I think Scotty will be brilliant, like he has pretty much every test match he's played. These conditions, hopefully should suit him. It's a pretty simple game plan, top of off stump all day, and I'm sure he'll get rewarded. So he's fit. He's had a really good couple of month break, ready for big English summer.
David Warner has always said, like, he wants to keep playing for Australia till the time he can win world titles for them. This is a great opportunity for him. He's also made his announcement, or his announced his desire to retire in front of his home crowd in Sydney. Just, you know, your take on his comments and just how you see him going.
Yeah, that'd be great. You know, that'd be a fairy tale finish for Davey after a long test career to finish at home, SCG. But, you know, he'd be the first one to admit you've got to be scoring runs and, you know, to make sure that you're in the team every time. So, yeah, hopefully he's churning out hundreds and hits 100 on his final game in the SCG. There's a bit of cricket before that, though.
Probably 100 in this final, if it works out. Yeah. Just a couple of, from me, Pat. Going back to preparation, there's also the Ashes coming up. So while you're focused on this, do you have half an eye on the Ashes, or will it start again once this match is done?
It'll mainly start once we finish this match. I think the prep leading to this game's about been getting used to these English conditions, the Duke Spore, you know, it's all things that are a little bit different to, well, certainly different to India where we just were a couple of months ago, but different to what we're used to back home. And then, yeah, the planning will start kind of after this test match as we zero in on the opposition.
And finally, I mean, Cam Green has just spent the last 2 months calling Rohit Sharma his captain. Have you brought him back into the camp? Have you had to remind him that you are his captain?
I know. I keep seeing him having dinner with all the couple of his Indian teammates. No, Greeny's been great. Good to get him back. Yeah, he managed to get home to Perth for a couple of days to freshen up. And, yeah, it's the same old Greeny that's come back to us.
Yeah, the Aussie skipper there with Bharat Sandaraisen, and he had a bit of spring in his step, I thought. Pat Cummins, looking forward to, you know, getting into what is going to be a fantastic summer, but made a distinction that, hey, we're here for these 5 to 6 days at the Oval before we hone in on what's happening for the Ashes. So very single-minded about what their job is, Harmy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought he took two or three points that to sort of make and that he made, I sort of picked up on and throw back at you, is Simon, is that talking about Warner and his retirement and that decision. You know, if Warner gets his wish, for me, then he wins the Ashes, because if he's still in the test team after two games, means he's had a good start the test summer, he's put England on the back foot, and that goes a long way of getting a stronghold in the Ashes. Scott Boland talked about Scott Boland, and it's a bit different to Australian conditions. And he talked about Scott Boland being basically a safe pair of hands that hits the top of off stump. Now, the top of off stump has disappeared. Everybody that's bowled the top of off stump against this England batting unit, whether it's Ulrich Nokia and Kigisa Rabada at 90 mile an hour, whether it's Pakistan bowlers in Pakistan, you know, Tim Southee, who is unbelievable performer in New Zealand. Everybody that's just run up and hit the top of off stump has gone over third man on as a reverse scoop, been pulled no end through mid wicket, slugged over the top of extra, over the top of mid wicket, smashed over extra cover. So Scott Boland's selection, you go, well, if he is like a bowling machine, just hits the top of off stump, I think the England bowlers quite like facing that, because that's what's disappeared in this last 12 months. So I'm interested to see how they change, because this is the big thing for me with this England-Australian Ashes, is that everybody that's come and gone, it won't happen to me. By the time they've gone through a test match and a half, that train, that bullet train that's hit the opposition that England have played, have got no answers, nowhere to go, and gone, wow, what is this? And that could be, I think that was just evident in that interview with Pat Cummins.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Australians will do their homework after this Indian tested finish. And if, you know, England start to get away with that aggression and that unorthodox play, for want of a better way of putting it, I think, you know, that they need to have a plan B. And I think in any of these games, you need to have a plan B. So if Scott Boland and the way he bowls isn't working to the exactness they would like, well, you know, you've got to be able to adjust. And that's, I think, a key ingredient to any test nation now. It's not as simple as going out with what England now do. It's not as simple as going out and saying, boys, hit the top of off stump. Those days are probably changing a fair bit. Now we're seeing more 20-20 bowling coming into it, more 50-over bowling coming into it, with using your crease more, bowling different sorts of deliveries at different paces, those sort of things. So you have to become more of a thinking bowler in Test cricket instead of just going that long period of time of making sure that, you know, we're line and length and we're building pressure. I think the way to build pressure against England is going to be getting wickets. And if it takes variety to get those wickets, well, the Australians have got to make sure that they're capable of doing it. On the David Warner situation, what I'm probably most pleased about, Harmy, is, you know, it wasn't sort of asking for a farewell tour. It was saying, my form's not there. You know, this is what I'd like to do, but if my form doesn't warrant it, so be it. It doesn't happen. So, you know, he's put back on the agenda that you have to perform to stay in this Australian team, which on the eve of what they're going to go through on this English summer, I think is really smart. And it probably endeared David Warner to a lot of people that he may have been on the, you know, at the crossroads with, that were thinking, oh, gee whiz. I think they'll probably say, oh, I'll give him another chance, because it wasn't something you probably expect so much from David Warner. And he came out and basically said, hey, you know, want to play, give it my best shot, but if I'm not doing what we need to do to win and hold my spot as an individual batsman, no favours for me.
Yeah, and that, I agree. And I think I actually think David Warner was talking to himself. I really do. When he was talking about the retirement, talking about getting to Sydney, I think he was having a conversation with himself more than anything else, which was to get himself, well, if you don't perform, you're not going to get to Sydney. I'd love to go out. And he deserves it, I must admit. I've got a lot of time for David Warner. I really have. I think he's been great for the game, apart from that one stupid moment that he had in South Africa. And I've been questioned on when I said moment, because it probably wasn't a moment. It's been over a prolonged period. But it was the moment he got caught was the one that will always go with his career or have a cloud over his career that's going. But he's had a fantastic career. And I think proper players, top quality players who have been fantastic for the game. And I mean, fantastic for the game. Not all things fantastic for the game have to be nice. That don't have to be this sort of, oh, he's a great player, he's a great bloke, he's this, that and the other. Yeah, little Jack Russells, little terriers can be great for the game, because when you go into a ground or you go into a series, the person you want to love to hate, they're good for the game because they're characters in the game. And David Warner's definitely one of them. And he deserves a chance to go out the way he wants to go out, because his career has deemed that. But when I heard him talk, I was like, it was a bit like the Graham Swan one when he decided to retire in Australia. It's like, well, I'm going to go and tell the world I'm retiring, and then I'm going to go and tell my teammates and my captain after, as opposed to you're doing a process and doing it for. I was just wondering if David Warner was trying to get himself G'd up to go, right, I've made this big statement now, I'm going out in 8 months' time, when I've got to perform to get to 8 months' time. And I think largely down to his performance would be runs in the World Test Championship and runs in the first test. And like I said before, if he gets to Sydney, I think he goes a long way winning the Ashes for Australia, because it means he's performed early in an Ashes series as an opening batter. That tends to put you on the front foot and give you a great chance of winning.
At the World Test Championship, it gets underway at the Oval, less than 24 hours. There is a reserve day. They're making sure they're giving this match every chance to get a result. Who wins and why, Harmy? I think, you know, I'm going to be biased and go with the Australians. The toss is all important. I think it'll be a normal, from what I'm seeing on the news footage that's coming around the world at the minute, I'm seeing that it's going to be a normal oval wicket that's going to have a bit of pace and a bit of bounce in it as the game goes on, with a bit of seam early doors. And I think if Australia can get on the right side of that toss and get off to a positive start, I think they're going to be bloody hard to knock off. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's going to be, I think Australia win. I think Australia could win comfortably for the simple fact India, the preparation's been good. They've been here a while, but a lot of their players off the back of a long, hard IPL, moving ball conditions, because even though the sun's out, and we've seen it in London at Lord's the other day, that it does get, you know, warmish, not the sort of high temperatures that Australia and India are used to. But when it's warm here, the ball moves. And when the ball moves, the bowling stocks that Australia have got, just getting themselves ready to go for the world, for the Ashes, I think they'll be right at it. So for me, I think if Australia turn up and play to their potential, then I think Australia will beat India inside 5 days. I don't think we've got a reserve day. I think scoring at the Oval is quick scoring ground. The pitch will be decent, but both bowling attacks have got wickets in them. So for me, I just think Australia's bowling attack is a little bit better than India's.
Good work, my friend. Top scorer of 49. You deserved every run you got there because you've just gone for the Aussies. Love it, love it, love it. World Test Championship gets underway. Of course, you'll hear it all on the SEN network and on the SEN app. This is Road to the Ashes. Thanks to Australian Made. Look for the green and gold kangaroo. Up next, English spinning legend. Yeah, it comes off the tongue okay. English spinning legend, Motti Panesar.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Australian made. Look for the green and gold kangaroo logo and buy authentic Australian products. Road to the Ashes with Simon O'Donnell and Steve Harmison.
Welcome back to Road to the Ashes. Thanks to Australian Made. Look for the green and gold kangaroos. Simon O'Donnell, Steve Harmison with you. Harmy, I'm pretty excited. We've got one of your good mates coming on, and you've spent time with him out in the cricket field. You've spent time with him journeying around the world, journeying around parts of England. And I reckon you might have a pretty good rapport with him. And I talk of Motti Panesar, former England spin bowling great, who joins us on Road to the Ashes. Motti, fantastic to have you on board today. I've never met you. I've always wanted to, and I'm bloody pleased to be able to look at you and say g'day.
Thanks, mate. Thank you for having me on the show. And, yeah, it's good to say g'day to you as well.
It's a big couple of months coming up with the Ashes. We'll get past the World Test Championship just for the minute and stick with the Ashes and what's ahead. What your favourite Ashes memory for you? What is it?
One of my favourite memories, you know, like probably was, you know, playing that first test match at Perth and, you know, obviously I took 5 wickets, but then just the contest with Gilchrist, really. I remember getting him out sort of second ball. He had a massive stride and he sort of gloved it. And then I thought, what's the big fuss about Adam Gilchrist? You know, everyone thinks he's like, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread and, you know, he's not very good against left-arm spin. And then in the second innings, when he got 100, probably the quickest, second quickest 100 in Test cricket, I kind of realised how good this guy was. I think he hit me for 4 sixes in one over. And then Freddie came up to me and goes, Monty, I think that's done. I don't think you're going to bowl another over. So I soon realised how good Adam Gilchrist was.
Was Harmy much help to you when that carnage was going on? I wouldn't have seen him coming to give you a hand at any stage while that was happening, Monty.
No, I did.
No, not
I did.
At all, mate.
I did. I took you to start bowling darts because them 4 sixes went all over my head. I said a couple of weeks ago, the roof of my mouth was sunburned watching them go into the stand. I remember having a conversation with you during that spell and that time, and looking you in the eyes and going, "This is what the big time is. This is what Ashes cricket is all about."
Yeah, I remember. You know, you're talking to me about it, and The one thing that really caught me straight away was like the way Harmy or even Andrew Flintoff, you know, some of the other guys like Kevin Peterson, once you put them into like an England shirt against the Australians, immediately they'll switch into this sort of, that's it, we're really competitive, we've got to get this guy out, and you're really on top of the batsman straight away. And that one thing I realised, I thought to myself, one was really apparent how quickly you guys just switched into that competitive mode. Instantly, once, you know, it was sort of Ashes cricket, it was just the contrast difference, you know, for me, how relaxed you guys were off the field. But on the field, it was just like, right, you know, it's that killer instinct just quickly switched on.
And we lost 5-0 and probably deserved to lose 5-0 because of the teams that were on show at that time and how well Australia played in and how difficult it is to win in Australia. But winning in England, you were in Australia in 10-11, but winning in England was a little bit easier. We felt as though it was a bit easier for us, and we were obviously a lot more comfortable in our own back garden. But you have to get off to a good start, and the good start was Cardiff. And talk us through what happened at Cardiff in that last sort of hour and people running on and running off and what Jimmy Henderson was like and what Ricky Ponting was saying to you, what you can say, obviously, live on radio, unfortunately.
Yeah, like, well, obviously, you know, I think when I went out to bat, I thought, well, you know, I averaged four, I think one inside edge and another outside edge, and then the third ball I'm out. You know, that's how good my batting is. So for me to, like, go to Cardiff and actually, you know, save that test match, I think Jimmy was kind of helping me how to play against the seamers, and I was kind of helping him against the spin. You know, I always said to him, you know, when the ball goes past you and it turns, don't just follow it, just hold the line of the bat because you won't edge it. And it kind of helped him. And I actually remember in the lead up before the test match, Andy Flower said, we need batting buddies. We need the tail to wag a little bit. So Paul Collingwood obviously was my batting buddy. And he said, have a short back lift, keep your hands close to you, watch the ball, and also protect your stumps. So if it's at your stumps, play nice and straight. But if it's going past your nose, drop your hands quickly and just watch the ball. And it kind of, that's all I was thinking in my mind. I thought, right, at the stumps, play straight. If it's short, just duck out of the way. And that's it. So I had two pieces of information to follow. And I just did that, really. I didn't really think about drawing the test match. And every ball went by, I looked at Ricky Ponting's face and he wouldn't say anything. He would just look at me and just probably under his breath think, you know, what is this guy doing batting here and trying to, like, I can't get him out. It's probably one of the worst number 11s I've played in my career. And I can't seem to get this guy out during the Ashes. So I think he was probably rather annoyed with me.
I'm sure there would have been some words of encouragement from the Australians. Who was sort of the most vocal while that period of time was happening in the test match?
Yeah, look, there's Peter Siddle telling me a few things. I think one went past my nose. He goes, the next one's going to hit you on the head. And he bowled a Yorker, you know, he's like trying to double bluff me every time. You know, like, oh, his bat sponsor's not going to be happy. You know, you look at him, he's trying to save a test match for England. Oh, he's going to get a huge fine for that. And I remember that test match, I was going to get the bat stickers for the following test match at Lord's, but that ended up being my only home test match in England. I didn't play another home test match after that. All the other ones were away. So, yeah, they didn't say too much. They weren't too vocal, but I think it was just, you know, little pieces of things like what Andy Flower was good at. He was able to spot weaknesses in our team and areas where we need to get better at, and the tail was one area. And that was probably the starting point where we thought, right, England want to become number one team in 24 months. They did it in 18. And that was probably that catalyst, gave that self-belief to everyone that actually any given situation, we can draw a test match, or any given situation, we can sort of come out of it and win. And, you know, that over my dead body kind of attitude. So that's when things started to go really well for England after that.
What do you think, looking at the squad coming into this Ashes, Monty, we've had Jack Leach, unfortunately, been ruled out with injury and a stress fracture in his lower back. Knowing the England spinners and still staying involved in cricket as you have done since you retired, what are you sort of seeing as a possible outlet from a spin point of view during the Ashes? Is there a fresh face about?
Well, I think there's no, like, frontline spinners at the moment that are going to compete with Jack Leach. And if they look at a like-for-like replacement, then it'd probably be someone like Liam Dawson, who can bowl a little bit, do a little, you know, bat and, you know, do a good job, control one end. I think that's what Ben Stokes will probably want. He wants someone who can give him 15, 20 overs, control one end. And the same thing with Moeen Ali. He could be the other guy that they look up to as a frontline spinner. Because at some point, they will need a frontline spinner, maybe at Old Trafford, at the Oval. And before that, they've got, obviously, a few four-day games coming along. You know, I think June the 11th, they've got there where they may see the likes of Will Jacks, Moeen Ali, all of them sort of being given a game and see how they're bowling. Because, you know, at Edgbaston, I don't know, they may not even go with a frontline spinner. You know, don't be surprised if the Australians see an extra inch of grass on first day on the Edgbaston wicket, because there isn't a spinner there, and it keeps the likes of Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad in the game throughout the whole Test match. You know, that could be a strategy. Ben Stokes may think, you know what, I may just have to reverse it now and produce sort of seamer friendly pitches, because we just don't have a frontline spinner at the moment. Or even if they do, the Australians will look to go after him as well, you know, psychologically. So I don't know if they should play, should have flat wickets. I just think maybe they should play home advantage to the England seamers.
And Mont, you talk about, you know, the spinner, somebody you know very, very well. He said he fell out of love with Test cricket, didn't enjoy playing Test cricket. There's a lot of talk in England at this minute in time, bringing Moeen Ali back. You know Moeen. One, would you bring him back? And two, where do you think Moeen's sort of mindset is at this moment in time? Can he get ready for 10 days' time if he is picked to go into the first Test match?
Well, I think the first question I asked Moeen is, are you 100% committed, you know, to come back and play? You know, do you still want to play red ball cricket? And how is your stock delivery? You know, are you ready to bowl 20 to 30 overs in a first innings, or, you know, we want 40 overs out of you in a Test match? Are you able to do that? And if the answer is yes, then I would play him on June the 11th, you know, where they've got a game at Edgbaston. I think it's Warwickshire, do have a first-class game there. Play him there, see how he's playing, because if he's got the appetite, and like you said, if he's still got love for red ball cricket, then put him in four-day cricket and see how he's bowling, you know, if he really wants to play Ashes cricket. And I just think that's what they should do. And there's a few first-class games, you know, before that, you know, through each Test matches. And that gives time for England, for the likes of Rob Key, to assess and think, right, do we bring a spinner in or not? But they may just go the other way, where he's been with Ben Stokes at Chennai Super Kings, and he'll say, look, we were part of a winning IPL team. We know how to win. Maybe that winning momentum is needed in the England team right now. And, you know, because the first Test match is at Edgbaston, Moeen, are you ready to play? If his answer is yes, right, he'll probably then play that first Test match, even not, you know, playing the first class game.
Monty, a couple of very important questions, particularly the last one I'm going to ask you. But 12 times you got 5 wickets in an innings. What's the one you remember most?
Well, that's a good question. I think, obviously, I remember my first one against Sri Lanka at Trent Bridge. That was my first 5 ever, you know, and that was like, for me, it was a big deal getting 5 wickets for England. But probably the one which I find, obviously, you know, memory to me was probably in Mumbai, where I took, I think, 10 wickets in a match, and me and Swanee kind of won that sort of Test match. Kevin Peterson played unbelievable, scored 180. It was a brilliant knock. But then that was the first time under Alistair Cook's captaincy, you know, we won the tour to India, first time in 27 years. So that was, you know, a big moment for us. And since then, I think no team has won in India. So India sort of seems to be the next thing for any team to go there and beat them, because they're just unbeatable in Indian conditions.
The second part, and a very serious part to this question, Monty, did you feel robbed in a way that you weren't batting number 10 for England and you were batting behind Steve Harmison?
I always thought Steve Harmison never had, he never had it as a batsman. He used to have his gun and more kit. First of all, he didn't know how to hold a bat, let's be honest. You know, he was in the dressing room. He didn't know how to hold a bat, right? But then, secondly, like, he would think he can hit big sixes and, you know, he would be like, yeah, you know, I can do a job here. But I was like, come on, Steve, let me be at 10. Let me take on the sort of new ball, and then you come in at 11. And then, you know, I'll give you a strike, you know, 5 balls, and then, you know, you can have 1 ball or something like that. You know, I'll get off strike, and then let me build an innings. But unfortunately, the role's reversed. And I think whenever I see Steve Harmison, I always feel like I robbed him of a first ever 50 in Test cricket, which he deserved to have. He batted so, so well at the Oval. And he got to 49 and unfortunately didn't get his 50. So I feel like he deserves at least one first class, one Test 50.
So I didn't want him to hit sixes and fours. I just want him to run one more run.
That was a run out, wasn't it?
Yeah, I wasn't very good with my running. I think me and Imzamam have something in common. We both were very slow off the mark.
we've had a bit of a joke over the journey because Harmy's highest Test score is bigger than mine, and I used to try and bat it number seven, Monty. So that's how bad a player I was. And be assured, before you came on, the only reason you were able to come on that your top score is 26 in Test cricket and wasn't above 48. Because if it was above 48, you wouldn't be anywhere near this podcast tonight.
Absolutely. I think Harmy selects his guests, the guys who have had lower Test score than him and batted below him as well. And I seem to fit that bill immediately. So I can see why I'm on this podcast.
And you're an absolute beauty, Mont.
Fantastic. Monty, great to have you on board. Your prediction for the Ashes series?
Well, it depends. If I got an Australian asking me, then I'll say 5-0 to England. But then, obviously, if I've got to be realistic...
We're going to be like that, are we?
I think Ben Stokes is going to produce some entertaining cricket, I'll be honest with you. He's going to be brilliant. He's going to... His captaincy decision-making is what is going to... Everyone's going to be talking about. The declaration that he made, at Pakistan, that first Test match. A lot of captains wouldn't have done that in the past. So that is what I think people are going to look for is, is he going to declare and make a game out of this to lose? And I'm sure they may lose one or two Test matches, but it'll be in an entertaining fashion. And I've been speaking to a lot of England fans right now, and they're saying, I don't care if we lose the Ashes, as long as it's entertaining cricket. That's all they care about. And I think England, the way they are at the moment, the X factor that they bring to the table, and Ben Stokes, hopefully his knee is good, I just edge England. I think it'll be 3-2. Every game's going to be a result. Hopefully the weather won't be that great. I think England will just edge it 3-2.
Great to hear from you, Monty. We look forward to hearing from you again as that tour goes on. And I want to hear more about the run out. But I want to hear it in person somewhere when I'm over in the UK about how you ran out Harmy for 49. I think that's absolutely brilliant.
We should replicate it maybe somewhere outside Regent's Park or something when we're going for that run.
What a very
Monty, the
idea.
Ball would have to go for nearly four for me and you to run another single, especially the size of me at the minute.
Monty, great to have you on board. Enjoy the Ashes series. Thanks for your time tonight or in the morning and getting up nice and early as you have. Enjoy the Ashes.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me on the show. And I look forward to it over the Ashes joining you guys.
Good on you, Monty. Panesar joining us there. A wonderful thrill to be chatting to him and knowing that, the bloke that just stopped Harmy from getting a half century, a test half century. I'd be sick if Steve Harmison had a test half century. It just shouldn't happen. This is Road to the Ashes. Thanks to Australian Made. Look for the green and gold kangaroo. We'll be back with more shortly.
Australian Made. Look for the green and gold kangaroo logo and buy authentic Australian products. Road to the Ashes with Simon O'Donnell and Steve Harmison.
This is Road to the Ashes. Thanks to Australian Made. Look for the green and gold kangaroo. Some questions have been coming in right throughout the week from our listeners around the world. A couple of interesting ones. One in particular that I'm going to start off with. Harmy, it's for you. Oof. Tell us once and for all, what in the world happened with the opening ball of the 2006 Ashes at the Gabba? Freddie Flint. Oh, I know you were bowling to him pre-game, but that was just all a bit much.
Yeah, just a bit much. It's just trying too hard. I literally tried too hard. I'd love to say I froze. I can't remember being in that position. We're all nervous going into an Ashes series. Comes back to preparation as well. Yeah, the preparation is huge. And
you're saying you weren't prepared.
I wasn't prepared, no. I think before 2005, I had 30 first-class wickets in five games off the back of a fantastic one-day series. Going into 2006-07, I didn't play in the warm-up games in Adelaide and somewhere else was beforehand. And we, if you remember the side that we had a lot of quite a few players missing. I'm sounding like Stuart Broad and talking about the Void series here, but it wasn't like that. It was nowhere near like that. And I declared myself fit. I was fully fit. I just wasn't bowling prepared. Like I said, my best mate threw my ball at me a minute to 11 and I give him it back 30 seconds later. And just,
what do you think?
It was like a good curry. I just missed the middleman out. You visualize the night before and you tell yourself, you run up, Justin Langer got hit, Ponson got hit, Hayden got hit, all within six overs at Lords. And yeah, they're all short balls and they were nervous as what we are. So I'm going to run up, Gabba, pitch it up, try and swing it back onto Alfie's off stump. He's going to miss it, LBW, or he's going to nick it straight to slip. And I got 95% of it spot on. I just missed the middleman out. So, yeah, it's one of them things. The best reaction, the hilarious reaction was, if you can imagine the 30-yard circle, Matthew Hoggard is now standing on the 30-yard circle with his hands in the air going, yes, yes. Oh, no, no. There's no Barmy Army cheering. Freddie's got the ball in his hand. Army's bowled it. He surely hasn't bowled it straight there. So he's got his arms up, and then he just starts sort of windmilling as the sort of warm up for bowling at the next over at the other end. So look, all in all, it was just literally try too hard, try to bowl too fast. And it's a lesson for any youngster out there. Mm. Make sure you're prepared, because I wasn't. And that's never going to leave me. It's never going to forget. I'm never going to forget it.
But a great
ball, another ball.
Great moment.
Yeah, but another ball. I had about another ball 15 seconds later. And the one thing I will take from that series is I never give up, because after that moment, I made sure that I stayed on the field for every second that series was while I was getting picked. But unfortunately, we weren't very good and we didn't have many people to come in, because a lot of people were getting dropped after that ball. And I played five test matches, so it's no surprise that we lost 5-0.
Oh, dear. No, that was I've been dying to ask you that question, and so have a lot of our listeners, and I've been more keen to ask that question since I know your highest test score is 49 and mine's 48. Another question here from Alex. Back over your way again, Harmy. Is Ben Compton a chance to get a look in if Crawley struggles? Now, he started the summer, obviously, very well with a half century and three quick boundaries in the second innings against Ireland. Is there a bit of a microscope on Jonathan Crawley, and is Ben Compton the man?
Crawley's Zach Crawley. Zach's not getting dropped. Nowhere in the world is he getting dropped. I think the only way I think Crawley comes out of the team is if England are short of bowling and Ben Stokes can't bowl.
Mm.
Then they might have to look at, we're going to have to get a fifth bowler in here. And if we get a fifth bowler in, the only batting slot that's up for grabs is at the top of the order, is Crawley. So if Stokes misses out a couple of times with the ball, comes back, tries to bowl, and his knee's not right, you might find that everybody moves up one, and someone like Sam Curran comes into the team, bats at number seven, or they might then play, if they are playing Will Jacks or Mo and Ali, then one of them bats seven and Sam Crawley comes in at number eight, gives you five bowling options. For me, that's the only way you're going to get Crawley out of the team. Compton scored some runs. There's one or two others. Lees is scored a few runs, back in form. No, I don't think any of them have got a chance. And that's the problem with Crawley. There's one thing dropping him. The other thing is replacing him. And you've got to replace him with somebody that fits into the mould of the way Stokes and McCullum want to play. Compton, he's a blocker. I can't see him coming back. I can't see him being in the reckoning to play Test cricket while McCullum and Stokes are in charge of this cricket team.
Alex, there's a pretty good answer to your question on Zach Crawley. Where did I get Jonathan from?
John Crawley played in the 99 Ashes. He played in 2001. Been 2002-03 when I came over for the first time. Middle order batsman from Lancashire and Hampshire. That's who you're thinking of.
Yeah, it was not too good when I'm asking about someone who played 20 years ago, really, is it? I don't think he's going to do much in the series. What do you think?
It's a sign of old age.
Hey, hey. enough of that. Thank you very much.
He was a good player, John Crawley.
He was. He was a good player. He's obviously stuck in my mind along the way. Well, it's going to be a fantastic cricket summer. You can follow all of it on our social media at SEN_cricket on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok, at TalkSport2 or at cricket_TS on Twitter. Harmy, another show comes to an end. We get closer and closer. When we meet next week, we'll know who won the World Test Championship and we'll be right into the Ashes starting on June 16. I look forward to that.
Yeah, can't wait, man. Can't wait. Thanks again.
Good on you. Steve Harmison joining us there. This has been Road to the Ashes. Thanks to Australian Made. Look for the green and gold kangaroo. We'll be back next week for one final show before the first ball is bowled at Edgbaston on June 16.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.